next public hearing is subdivision 2006-61 MLK Partners.
This is an application to consider the subdivision of land in an AR1 agriculture residential district in Broad Creek 100, Sussex County, dividing 43.29 acres into 36 lots, also requesting a variance from the maximum allowed cul-de-sac length of 1,000 feet and being located south of Route 488, 1,100 feet west of U.S. Route 13. For the benefit of the record, the applicants did provide an exhibit booklet entitled Millstone Subdivision. It includes project summary, a request to the commission for narrative acceptance, an application or copy of the application, a reference to the state strategies and an aerial map, references to the comprehensive plan, a tax map, a soil survey map,
the drawing,
a USGS quadrangle map, a technical advisory committee comments, a copy of the preliminary subdivision plan, a wetlands delineation, a non-binding feasibility statement, comments from the Office of State Fire Marshal approval, DLDOT letter of no objection, an email correspondence from DLDOT, photos of Oakwood Road, an accident report on Oakwood Road, a DLDOT corridor plan map, an article from the Seaford Star on a housing article, declaration of covenants and restrictions for the project, a letter of support for establishment of the project, a letter from Barry Neal, a school district letter in reference to bus stop location, a Purdue Corporation statement of access and ability to serve letters, a statement of satisfaction referencing section 99-9C of the subdivision regulations, and proposed findings of facts and conditions, and they are a part of the record. And I would ask Mr. Abbott if he has any additional comments.
Mr. Chairman, the TAC report of April 18th of 2007 will be made a part of the record. I've passed down a copy of a revised plan that was submitted on September 17th. The plan is in the booklet. On February 7th of this year, received a letter from Mr. Robertson. He reviewed the restrictive covenants and found them acceptable. And on February 29th, we received a letter. It's addressed to the commission. I live across Route 488 from the proposed site. I believe it would not be good for the community to have such a development at the proposed location. This land has been farmed for over 90 years. And that was signed by Mr. Herman Oakles. I'm assuming he was talking about his land that he owns at his farm. And that's all I have, unless you have any questions.
All right, sir. We thank you, Mr. Abbott. And the chair recognizes Mrs. Hansen.
Thank you very much. Good evening. My name is Stephanie Hansen. I'm an attorney with Young Conaway here in Georgetown. And I'm here tonight representing the applicant, which is MLK Partners. They're the developer of this project. With me are Joe Collick.
Excuse me just for a second. Ladies and gentlemen, we are in the midst of a public hearing. If you need to confer, I would appreciate if you would do it in the lobby. Thank you. Okay, go ahead.
With me tonight are Mr. Joe Collick, who is the K in MLK. We also have Mike Mehetta and Richard Mehetta, who are the M's in MLK. Steve Liffers, who's the L, could not be here this evening with us, but we do have John Murray with Kircher Engineering. They're the engineering firm for this project. And we also have, as one of our witnesses today, tonight, will be Mr. Greg Sizemore. MLK Partners formed in 2005, and this is their first project. However, Mike Mehetta, as I'd mentioned to you before, is one of the principals in this partnership, and he actually heads Mehetta Construction, LLC. And Mehetta Construction has built over 150 single-family homes in Sussex County. Unless the home buyer chooses another builder, Mehetta Construction will be building the homes within this proposed subdivision as well. At this time, I'd like to ask Mike Mehetta to step forward to present some information to you.
Good evening. My name is Michael Mehetta of 11 Sam Pebble Drive, Seaford, Delaware.
And what is your position in MLK Partners?
I am one of the principal partners.
What's your position in Mehetta Construction?
I'm a co-owner of Mehetta Construction, and I'm involved in every aspect of construction for my company.
OK, Can you confirm that Mejeda Construction has built over 150 single-family homes in Sussex County?
Yes.
Where were some of those projects?
I built projects in Holly Shores Development, Little Meadows Development, which is approximately about 1 mile from the proposed site that we're trying to get past, Crestfield Development, Seaford, Fox Glen Development, Seaford, Bay Oaks, the beach, Duff Knoll at the beach, Chipman's Pond in Laurel, Old Church Landing in Laurel, and other lots, individual lots around Sussex County. And in the last year, we've built three houses on three lots that are adjacent to the proposed development here tonight.
What were the selling prices of the homes?
The homes that we're trying to, the homes I've built have gone from about $180,000 to $800,000.
Will Mejeda Construction be building the homes in Milltown if it gets approved? Millstone?
Yes.
What will the range of those, or price range of those homes be?
We're hoping that the price range will be from $190,000 to $220,000.
If Mejeda Construction builds the homes, will they be built, stick built on site?
Yes.
And what square footage are we talking about?
Minimum square footage we have proposed is 1,300 square feet.
Okay. Is it possible for the home buyer to choose another builder if they really wanted to?
Yes, as long as it's stick built and, stick built home, we're going to allow.
Okay. Stay right here and make sure this works. Right. I believe this is actually one of the exhibits in your exhibit book. This is figure 5 in tab N. This is the same home, actually, as in this home as well. There we go. Did Mejeda Construction build this house?
Yes.
And where is this house located?
This house is located at the adjacent to the entrance of Millstone, proposed Millstone.
And why is it located there?
Well, we did this house to start a precedence for what we're trying to build in Millstone.
So is that the type of home that you would expect to see in Millstone?
Yes, this home here, or whether it was a one-car garage or two-car garage. This home is built that you can easily expand to it, one garage, as time goes on, you get a little more money, want to keep adding to your home. We're trying to do homes that are easily expandable, and this is one of them.
This is an up-close picture of the home. I understand the home has now been sold.
Yes, actually, this home was sold, I believe, in November. We had a contract on it before the home was even completed.
And how much did it sell for?
$194,500.
Okay, thank you. Unless the commission has any questions at this time, you can have a seat.
Thank you.
This is a project that's been before you on April the 27th, 2006, and it was denied for a number of concerns were brought up by the commission members. And by the community. The previous application number was 2005-35. In its letter to the applicant dated May 26, 2006, the commission stated four reasons for its denial. I'll turn this down so that won't be a little distracting. There were four reasons in the commission's letter of denial in the past. I just want to read through them quickly for you, and we're going to address each of those as we go forward through the presentation. The first one is the commission is not satisfied that the subdivision applies to the requirements of the subdivision code, including the items in section 99-9C. Second, most of the other land in the area of this project is used for active agricultural purposes, including a dairy farm, three poultry farms surrounding the project. This proposal would not be in character with the surrounding areas. The project is along a part of Road 488 that's not suitable for development, such as this. Road 488 is a road with many curves and is narrow. In addition, the road is used frequently by farm equipment and large truck traffic. The subdivision is not compatible with this road. And lastly, the project, with its main entrance on a sharp curve along Road 488, does not allow for safe vehicular movement as required in the subdivision code. As I mentioned, we're here tonight to address each of these items as we go forward. What I'd like to do right now is kind of turn to the aerial project, our first exhibit. They tell me that this has a laser, a little beam. It does. This is a large view of the area where the project is located. The project is actually right here. We have an up-close view of that we'll flip over in just a second. But I want to talk a little bit about what's around the development. Here we have the town of Blades. This is Seaford. This is 113. This is 113A. and here is Oakles Road. So what we have is this project is directly south of Oakles Road. It's about a mile south of Blades. It's directly to the east of 13A, and it's west of Route 13.
You folks are more than welcome to move around over here so you can see if you need to see this exhibit. Or is it right there? Okay. Okay, then. All right. Excuse me. I'm sorry. All right. Pardon me.
Oh, that's fine. A little bit more about the surroundings before we get right into the plan itself. According to the Delaware Population Consortium, the town of Blades right now has 999 people. That's as of 2005. And within about a mile and a half of this proposed subdivision of Millstone, there's approximately 913 homes, and that represents 11 distinct communities. We bring this up to address the second comment by the commission that the proposed application would not be in character with the surrounding uses, and to show that this particular community of 36 homes on AR1 zone land in the middle of the other 913 single family and mobile homes is clearly in character with the surrounding uses of the property. And we hope that upon further deliberation that the commission will agree. Well, what do these communities look like? You know, is it really in character with what we want to put with what we want to build here? Let's go back to the PowerPoint. And I'll kind of go back and forth and show you where we are. This is one of the homes in Florence. It's the Johnson development. Sometimes they call it the Florence Johnson subdivision. A lot of times you see it as the Johnson development. And this is located. Can you believe it?
Mm-hmm.
I know.
It's a PowerPoint.
All right, let me back her up because I know. Okay, Florence Johnson. Here is the power. The Florence Johnson subdivision. This is our proposed Millstone. Florence Johnson is right across Route 13. It's not directly adjacent. This is not part of the Florence Johnson. Florence Johnson is not on the east side of 13, but it's on the west side. That's along with the Lloyd's development as well. But typical in the Johnson development, and Johnson and Lloyd's together, there's 101 small single-family homes, and this is what they pretty much look like. We go take a look along Route 13, which backs up right against this property that we're talking, Millstone. Here's this are some of the single-family homes along 13A. Clearly, these are all very, very similar to the ones that you saw earlier with Maheta. They're of the small, single-family home size. They're certainly in character. Next, just south of the Johnson development is Sussex Manor Mobile Home Park, which is right about here. And in Sussex Manor, there's 76 units in there. Next, we'll take a look at some of the homes over in Easter Lane. Easter Lane is located right here. Thank you. Yeah, John, if you could be Vanna White for me for just a little while, I would really appreciate it.
There is no way he can be Vanna White.
Well,
but he can use that pointer.
Easter Lane is right here. What I'm trying to do is just surround the development for you so you can see the surrounding uses, what they are. Because remember, here's the property. Here's the proposed Millstone site. We've got Johnson Estates here with the single family homes. We've got Sussex Mobile, Sussex Manor Mobile Home Park. Right along here is Easter Lane, the homes in Easter Lane. Again, it's the same sort of, you know, they're smaller single family homes. You go a little bit further, further east, there's the Todd's Mobile Home Park, which I don't have a picture of. Next, if we actually want to take a look up on Oakles, let's look up on Oakles Drive itself. Take a look at the homes that are there. And again, you see they're very similar. Just to mention, I don't have other pictures of the homes in the area. They're all going to run about the same. I don't have pictures of the mobile homes. You know what mobile homes look like. They're singles and there's some double wides. But I do want to tell you that surrounding in this area, here's what we've got. We've got about 101 homes, part of Johnson's and the Lloyd development. We've got 19 homes right along this alternate 13 here. We have 76, as I mentioned, down in Sussex Manor Mobile Home Park. We've got another 82, which includes Easter Lane and Todd's over here. We have the directly across, let's see, the area formed by the triangle of Route 13, Airport Drive and Brickyard Road, which is this area right here. We've got another 114 single family homes and mobile home units. Of course, about a little bit further away, but still within a mile and a half, you've got Mobile Gardens in Hollyview, which is 283 mobile home units. Pine Ridge is a little bit further south down here. There's 50 mobile home units there. And Hillendale with 76 single family homes nearby as well. So this, yeah, the whole reason that we're bringing these up is just to show you that the homes that are going to be built, hopefully, will be built by Maheda Construction, are similar in size and character to the existing homes. I may have one more. Yes, this is one of the homes that's built right across Route 13 on Airport Road. So here we have the site, Ockles Drive. Airport Road is this road. It's really Ockles Road if you continue across Route 13. This home is this one right here. Although there are active farming operations, clearly, around the property as well, the property is in the middle of, like I said, 11 communities and 913 homes. If you want to know what those communities are, what we're considering the communities are the Lloyd Development, Johnson Development, Sussex Manor Mobile Home Park, Easter Lane. We're considering that a community because it's a small band of about 14 houses that are along Easter Lane. Todd's Mobile Home Park, Pine Ridge Mobile Home Park, Lakeside Estates, Hastings Estates, Mobile Gardens Mobile Home Park, Hollyview Mobile Home Park, and Hillendale, which are the single family homes. One more thing just to mention to you, and we'll get into this again a little bit further as we bring up one of the tax maps, but the land directly south of the property, the parcel directly south and adjacent to the property is zoned GR. So we're not completely in an enclosed AR1 area. At this time, we'll talk a little bit about the Sussex County comp plan and the state strategies. The 2003 Sussex County comp plan, as well as the 2007 proposed comp plan, both have this as a low density area. A low density area means 3/4 acre lot, single family or manufactured housing. And since public water and wastewater are not planned, the development should occur utilizing individual wells and on-site septics. And that's precisely what we have in this plan. This plan that we described tonight is single family homes on 3/4 acre lots minimum, utilizing individual wells and on-site septics. Again, this is an AR1 zone land, and the purpose of AR1 is to protect ag lands, but at the same time, quote, provide for low density single family residential development. And that's from the Sussex County Code. Something interesting about this that I don't think you saw before, because you've seen a lot of this before, but you haven't seen all of it before, and I don't think that you probably saw this particular exhibit before. This is taken from the state strategies book, and this shows you, here is Ockles Drive, here's 13A, this yellow is a level 3. I think you may have been under the impression before that everything on this property, this entire project, was in a level 4, but it's not. It's half in a level 3. Everything in the yellow is a level 3 as far as the state strategies are concerned. Outside of the yellow, of course, is the level 4. So if you take a look at what they actually anticipate as a level 3, or what the state defines as level 3, level 3 investment areas are portions of county designated growth zones, development districts, or long-term annexation areas in municipal comprehensive plans that aren't in the level 1 or level 2. So that's the level 3. There's also, I think, another reason why this is in a level 3 is because of what DLDOT's planning on doing in the area. So if you'll take a look, I've included in your exhibit book a figure from the DLDOT Corridor Capacity Program Guide. That's actually tab P in your exhibit book. Mm-hmm. And what this shows is it's the current corridor plan for the state of Delaware. And as you can see, it can be a little difficult to tell with this particular plan, but because it's such a it's the area completely surrounding where this project is all within a transportation investment area that's called multimodal. It's not in a preservation area, and that's something important to know. And I think that's probably one of the reasons why the state has this in a level 3 as opposed to within a level 4. And if you take a look at this particular, at the corridor plan that DelDOT has come up with, the definition for transportation investment area multimodal, which is what this project is in, it's called areas of existing development or planned growth, capacity preserved through sustainable investment in roads, public transit, pedestrian, bicycle provisions, and access management. So this is an exhibit that shows the Department of Transportation's anticipated investment in and around Millstone. This is not shown as a preservation area. And that's important to note, because if it were within a preservation area, what they say, the definition of that, is where farmland, natural resources, and existing transportation facilities will be preserved through access management. This isn't in a preservation area. This is in a multimodal area. Next, we'll turn to the site plan. We'll actually start to get up close with this particular proposed subdivision. Which are pictures not as pretty as the ones we've seen. As I've mentioned, there are 36 single-family lots on 43.29 acres of land. It's an AR1 zone, which permits three-quarter acre lots on individual wells and septic. There's a theoretical maximum, and everybody always comes up with their theoretical maximum of what you could possibly, best case scenario, ever put on the land. The theoretical maximum here is 57, for what it's worth. Under the cluster option, you have a theoretical maximum of 43. Here, the applicant, however, he's proposing 36 units. And if you take a look at how that density actually calculates out, that's a density of 0.83 dwelling units per acre. And that's very, very low density. This is in, it's compatible and it's consistent with the Sussex County Comp Plan, which says low density area. There's 0.83 dwelling units per area, certainly low density. The code requires three-quarter acre lots. Here, the smallest lots in the in this proposed development are three-quarter acres. We actually have lots that are 2 acres or so. 6 of the 36 lots are greater than 1 acre in size. Currently existing on the site, Vanna, if you could help me out, point out where the currently existing, there are 2 abandoned chicken houses and an old dwelling, and all of those are anticipated to be demolished should this be approved. And MLK expects about a 3 to 4 year build out for this project. The open space in the development is 6.81 acres. That's about 15.73% of the site. And this consists of buffers and stormwater management. There's an additional 4.11 acres set aside for right-of-way, including streets. There'll be no sidewalks, but there will be streetlights. At this time, I'd like to bring up John Murray from Kircher Engineering to answer a few questions for us. Here.
Good evening, John Murray, Project Manager with Kircher Engineering, located in Georgetown.
Give me my first question. Has a wetlands delineation been performed at the property?
Yes, there has.
Okay, and who performed that?
That was JCM Environmental out of Newark, Delaware.
All right, I'd like to note for the record that the wetland report is located at tab I. Were wetlands found on the property?
Yes, there were.
Can you tell us what kind of wetlands these are and show us where they're located?
The wetlands that were located were classified as non-tidal wetlands.
It's a little bit harder to see on the black and white plan, but the wetlands are located along the property line adjacent to what it's referred to as the lands of Reuben K. and Cynthia N. Ockles, running in a northwesterly direction along the lands of William Ockles, terminating at Ockles Road. There's an existing drainage ditch in that area, and that was classified as non-tidal wetlands.
I think it's Ockles, Mr. Murray.
I apologize.
See, I've been telling him that since we started this, but he has not been listening. And now you've got it straight. It's
open. All in favor of Oakles, let's raise your hand there. Yeah, I thought that was right. Yeah. Okay.
Will there be any impact to any of the wetlands on site?
No, there will not.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about the septic system. Did DENREC issue a feasibility statement for this project?
Yes, I did.
Okay, I'd like to note for the record that the DENREC feasibility statement is located at tab J in your exhibit book. John, in previous comments from DENREC, this is with the previous plan that came before you. Actually, I think we might even change that with the plan that had come before him earlier. At any rate, DLDOT thought that previous lots 26, 34, and 35 might not support an on-site system. Can you tell the commission what we've done to address that concern?
The area that Stephanie is referring to is this target area right in here. The lots have somewhat of an awkward configuration. When the feasibility study was done, originally these lots were a little more square, and we found that there were a few lots where it was questionable if septic systems would be possible for those lots. So we changed the configuration somewhat to get into a target area for non-elevated sand mound septic systems. We do want to add that it was based off a feasibility study with a 200-foot grid. So we're hoping that if the plan were to be approved, that we can do a little bit more definitive testing in that area to make those lots a little more traditional in shape. But that is why the lot configuration is as it is.
Do we have a colorized exhibit that we could just flip to them for a second to show them that? Because they're odd-shaped lots, and that was one of the first things that that I noticed when we were talking about. You know, like, what's up with that? Yeah. So the reason that those lots are shaped the way that they are is so that you could make sure that you had lots that were going to perk.
Correct. And that would not have any sand mounds.
Okay. Are there any known or threatened or endangered species on the property?
No, there are not.
Are there any known historic or archaeological resources at the property?
No, there are not.
How about tax ditches? Are there any tax ditches on the property?
There are not.
All right, let's talk a little bit about forest cover. How many acres of forest are currently existing on the property?
Based on survey, approximately 5.37 acres.
And how many acres will still be wooded when the site is developed?
We project approximately 2.5 acres. The woods,
I'm going to flip back to the site plan. The woods are along the southeast portion of the property, the bulk of which are in this area, lots 24 through 27. But there is still a woods line that we look to maintain along the southeastern property or along the northeastern line in that area.
Okay. Is a forested buffer provided within this plan?
Yes, there are. There's
forested buffers along the northeastern property boundary in this location. There's also 30-foot forested buffers along the southeastern property line, along lots 14 through 17, also along lots 25, wrapping around the property all the way up to the lands of Barry Kay and Joan Neal.
I'd like to point out for the commission that the Department of Agriculture has stated in their comments, which is located in the TAC comments at tab G for you, that the forested buffer on this plan is sufficient to meet the county requirements. Also, maintenance of the forest buffer is addressed in the Declaration of Covenants and Restrictions for Millstone, and those are located at tab R in your exhibit book. Back to John. According to the county code, there must be 50 feet between any building requiring a C of O and the boundary of land used for agricultural purposes. Does this plan reflect this requirement?
It does. We've actually, in the areas where we've provided the buffers, which are 30-foot forested buffers, we've also expanded the building restriction line along the rear of the property to be 30 feet rather than the 20 feet, just to give a little bit of extra separation distance.
So actually, together, how much would that be?
Well, you've got 60 feet of restricted area.
Okay, as opposed to the 50 that was mentioned in the code. Regarding groundwater recharge, how is the property classified by the Delaware Geological Survey?
It's classified as good.
Okay, and what's the current estimate of the impervious cover at the site?
For a conservative estimate, we project 20%.
Okay. I'd like to note for the record that there's no law or regulation in place in Sussex County that states that 20% impervious cover over a recharge area classified good is not allowable. And if Sussex County is currently contemplating an impervious cover type ordinance, but even there, they're talking about requiring some special review when you're in an excellent recharge area as opposed to good, and then they're talking about 35% or more. At this time, I'd like to turn our attention to stormwater management. John, can you explain how stormwater management will be accomplished at this site?
We've left an open space area
along the eastern corner of the property, which would be our stormwater management area. And based on the soils data that we have in that area, it would be a wet pump.
Do we have an approximate total acreage?
The area set aside is 3 acres. We don't anticipate the pond taking up the entire area, but that is the area that has been left for that purpose.
One of the comments by the commission previously at the previous hearing was about how people were going to access that stormwater management area for upkeep. Can you tell us how you've addressed that?
On the previous plan, there wasn't a separation between lots 35 and 36 to access the open space / stormwater management area.
We had proposed at the time an easement. Since the last time this plan was presented, we've left an open space between lots 35 and 36 so that there could be access to the stormwater management area to maintain it.
Is that something that maybe we could better show on the colorized version of the site plan?
Quite honestly, I don't think it shows it that much better on our record.
But the open space would be situated between lot 35 and 36. It would be an independent area, not inclusive of lot 35 and 36.
Okay. I'd like to note for the record that the developer will be contacting the Sussex County Conservation District for the approval of a sediment and stormwater management plan. John, in the TAC comments, DENREC had requested a 50-foot setback from all catch basins and stormwater management ponds. Although this isn't a requirement by the Sussex County Code, what's our response?
It's not required, but our buffer areas will exceed what has been asked, so we anticipate that we would meet that buffer requirement.
Okay, thank you, John. That's it for now. With regard to other information on the plan, electric is to be supplied by Delmarva Power, telephone by Verizon, cable service by Comcast, and all of these utility letters are found in tab W in your exhibit book. Fire protection will be provided by the Blades Fire District. Police protection will be provided by Delaware State Police Troop 5. It's in the Seaford School District. The school district was contacted, and we sent them the plan. They were contacted by letter dated of February 11, 2008, and they have responded back and said that their response was really more aimed towards our school bus shelter. They said that it isn't required, but if we want to do it, that they'll work with us to put a school bus shelter in. At this time, I'd like to address another fundamental element of this plan, and that is the provision of moderately priced housing. This is an issue that Sussex County has struggled with for many, many years. As you know, there have been numerous conferences, there have been a lot of meetings all about how it is that we can procure more moderately priced housing in Sussex County. The last big conference that really talked about this was the Sussex County Today and Tomorrow conference held in this past fall, 2007. If you take a look in tab Q of your exhibit book, this is an article that I came across in the Seaford Star. It was reprinted in the Laurel Star as well, and it's probably in a number of other places. What it talks about is the outcome of the Seaford Today and Tomorrow conference. And what it basically says is that we need to find a way to build more moderately priced housing. Well, what is moderately priced housing? According to this article and according to conversations that I've had as well with Mr. LeCates from Sussex County, moderately priced housing is somewhere between $160,000 and $220,000. And how they come up with this is that's the price range that someone that earns 80 to 125% of the county's median income can afford. So if you can build within that $160,000 to $222,000 price range and build a home within that price range, then someone that's making 80 to 125% of the county's median income should be able to purchase that. And this has been, this isn't just something that, that Sussex County's been talking about, it's been part of conferences for a long time, but you've actually acted legislatively to do the most that you can to try to encourage people to build homes within this price range when you pass the moderately priced housing ordinance. And part of that ordinance is, if you'll recall, the ordinance is all about trying to entice developers to build homes within this price range. You got plenty of $400,000 homes and $500,000 homes, but you don't have too many of them, 160 to 222. So what the moderately priced housing ordinance asks of developers to do is, if you build 15% of the homes within this price range, then we can offer you a couple of incentives. We can offer you a density bonus of 20 to 30%. We can even offer you expedited plan review. Well, here we have a perfect example of a developer that wants to come forward, and he's not building 15% of his homes within the moderately priced housing ordinance brackets. He's not even building 50 or 75%, 100% of the homes that they're going to build, hopefully, in Millstone would fit within the 160 to 222 range. No increase in density. Never came forward asking for an increase in density. Remember, the density is 0.83 dwelling units per acre. Certainly did not ask for expedited processing. You know, they stood in line twice to get here before you guys tonight, twice. And this last time, it was for 17 months. So they haven't asked for any of those things. But yet what they're hoping to be able to build is the very type of housing that Sussex County has said, not only publicly and at conferences and meetings for quite some time, but has even passed a law to try to encourage people to do. And this is exactly what they want to be able to do. Regarding the current demand, in case you've got a little bit of concern about where are people really going to be buying these houses, even if we allow you to build them, regarding the current demand for this type of housing, I'd like to bring to the stand Mr. Glenn Sizemore to answer some questions for us.
Good evening. I'm Greg Sizemore. Glenn was my dad. He's been dead for several years, so I get calls all the time about it, but, you know, I'm Greg.
I saw your sign and
that's all right.
Me. Can you, again, state your name and occupation for the commission?
Yeah, I'm Greg Sizemore. I'm a partner in Glenn Sizemore Realtors.
And how long have you been involved in real estate sales in Sussex County?
Over 30 years.
What's the current state of the real estate market in general in this part of Sussex County?
It's not as bad as people think. I mean, it's certainly nothing like what it was, but it's a far cry from back when interest was 16, 18, 19, and 19%. It slowed right down. So, you know, you still got affordable rates. There's good bond programs out for first-time home buyers, and conventional rates at banks today, 6.25, 6.5. It's not too bad.
How are the homes that are priced within the range offered by Millstone, and their range that they've stated is 190 to 220, how are those kind of homes selling?
The ones that we built out there that Mike told you on the lots that surrounded the property, they were all sold either prior to completion or shortly thereafter. In general, there's a lot of first-time home buyers that are looking for new construction in these prices. There's a lot of houses for sale in older parts of Bridgeville and Seaford and Laurel that are some of them are in these price ranges, some of them are a little bit higher, but they offer a lot of old amenities. You've got cesspools on a lot of them, and you know, just not the newness of this. I've sold houses from ahead of since they started building. They built a jam-up product, great construction, on-site all the time, works neat as a pin. They built my own house, you know. So I'm not here to preach to the choir. I'm just telling you that they're a darn good builder.
Well, do you feel there's a demand for housing within this price range?
Definitely, there's no question. I mean, the county's addressed that before. That's pretty much a no-brainer.
Okay, well, as a local realtor, you probably know a lot about areas of and land that's for sale in the area, the areas and land that is sold in the area. Can you tell us a little bit if anywhere? Well, let me first mention this is a map that comes from the Sussex County mapping and addressing section, and this is just straight offline. You know, I got it on your online maps. I've outlined Millstone here for you. Here is Oakles Road. Here is alternate Route 13. Here's 13 here. just to kind of give the commission their bearings with this. If you want, can you walk over here and tell us, is there any other properties that have perhaps sold in this area? And the reason that we want to talk about this is, you know, are there changing land uses going on?
Let's talk about, we'll talk about both ends of it here. Down here to the south, just a little bit, I'll give you some exact dates.
Well, we don't need exact dates.
Okay. The a member of the Oakles family sold approximately 38 to 40 acres, which is just down here off Murdoch Road, and it settled at 530 in 2007 to a guy that's going to do a development. I called their real estate agent today, and they definitely purchased that for development use. This piece right here is currently owned by YWJ. That's the piece she was talking to you about that's got the GR zoning. That's owned by David Lewis, who owns that. And then also,
With the advertisement, I suppose he's advertising that. How is he advertising that in the multi-use? But for what? For what use?
Mobile homes. It is GR zoned ground. I have copies of all the listings if you want them. And then there's currently, next door to the 38-acre piece, there's a 13-point-some-odd acre piece that the Oakles family currently has for sale now. So.
Okay, well, thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Sizemore.
Do you want this information?
That's all right.
No, that's all right. The reason we're bringing this to your attention is, again, to show you that the surrounding land uses, particularly the larger tracts, are changing in this area. This is not solely just an agricultural area. As I've mentioned before, it's located within a mile and a half of 11 communities and 931 single families or mobile homes. Next, I'd like to talk about a big issue that was raised at the last P&Z hearing that formed really two of the four bases for your denial, and that is traffic safety. In particular, the third and the fourth comments from the commission's denial state, and I'll read these again. I've already read them earlier, but let's kind of refresh what they said. The project is along a part of Road 488 that's not suitable for a development such as this. Road 488 is a road with many curves and is narrow. In addition, the road is used frequently by farm equipment and large truck traffic. The subdivision is not compatible with this road. And number four, the project with its main entrance on a sharp curve along Road 488 does not allow for safe vehicular movement as required by the subdivision code. Oakles Road is a state road, and as a state road, DLDOT has jurisdiction. Although DLDOT did not require a TIS for this project, I think the problem, a big problem and a big sticking point that you had at the last hearing was the fact that the applicant did not come before you with a letter of no objection. That clearly was a problem. We have that letter of no objection tonight. It was issued on August the 28th, 2006, and can be found at tab L in your exhibit book. This means that DLDOT has reviewed the plan and determined that no improvements other than what might be required with the entrance plan are necessary, that this development's not going to be a burden on the surrounding roads. When it comes to determining whether or not vehicles from a proposed development can be safely accommodated onto and along a state road, we rely on the experts in DLDOT. And had those experts felt that the traffic that would be generated by Millstone could not be safely accommodated, they would have done a couple of things. They would have said, you need to make some improvements to Oakles Road, or they would have required an alternate access point, which is something that we'll talk about a little bit later, because we actually proposed an alternate access point, and they said, no, we don't want it there. We want it off of Oakles Road. But none of these things were required. In order to be extra cautious, however, DLDOT has stated that the applicant must perform a site distance analysis and submit that analysis with the entrance plan for Millstone. And the applicant will do this and will comply with whatever requirements are imposed by DLDOT pending that review. Go back to the slides. These are pictures that are within your within tab N of your exhibit book, and I'd like to kind of take you down some of the roads in front of this development so that you can see them yourselves. This is a road. If you were standing at the entrance of Millstone right here, and you were going to look west up along Oakles Drive here around the curb, this is what you would see. If you were to stand and just turn east facing Route 13, this is what you would see with Route 13. You actually see Route 13. The other road, you can see the up along the curb, the homes along here. If you're standing in front of, which is the Maheda home, kind of built in one of these little parcels here, and you're looking up towards the entrance of Millstone, this would be the entrance to Millstone, right about in here. See the sign that tells you there's a curve coming? Now, this is an interesting picture, because here you are, you're on Oakles Drive, you're heading east towards the entrance of Millstone, towards this big curve, because I think this is what people are worried about when they say they felt this was an unsafe road. Well, here you are, you're traveling down the road. This is my car, my Honda Civic. Fancy lawyers make a lot of money, so we get Honda Civics. This is a car coming in the opposite direction. So you can see as you're heading, head down the road, here's the kern, and here's the car. And the reason that I bring this to your attention is so that you can actually see for yourself, and we talk about Oakles Road and the accident statistics and whatnot that I'm going to bring to your attention next, this is the road that we're talking about. One of the things that came up and was discussed a lot at the last hearing was the feeling, the perceived notion, there's a lot of accidents on Oakles Road. So what we wanted to do, because that's a big concern, is we want to figure out how can we quantify that? Let's figure out how many accidents happen on Oakles Road. So we made a number of telephone calls. We called the state police. We called DelDOT to find out who keeps accident statistics like this. And we found that person in DelDOT that keeps the accident statistics and has them for Oakles Road. And you'll see the email correspondence back and forth between the accident data coordinator and myself, and that's located at tab O in your exhibit book. We asked her to take a look back at the last 4 years. So she looked at 2004, 2005, 2006, 2007. How many accidents happened on Oakles Road? She said five. Five accidents have happened along Oakles Road over the last 4 years. So I said, well, can you give me a little bit more information on where those accidents were? She said, sure. Four of them happened at the intersection of Oakles Drive and 13A. Three of them happened when somebody was driving south on Route 13A. They wanted to drive into Oakles Road. They were sitting here, stopped, and somebody rear-ended them. One of them happened when somebody was coming from Oakles Drive. They wanted to cross Route 13 and blew through the stop sign. There was one accident, however, that did occur on Oakles Drive, and it occurred right around this area of where we're talking about this entrance to be. It was a single vehicle accident going too fast around a curve that ran into a ditch. So when you hear a lot about Oakles Drive being a very dangerous road, you know, the best we can do is try to get the data from the people who are charged with keeping the data. And this is the data that we could find for you. And the reason we're bringing all this to your attention is that with the letter of no objection from DelDOT, the actual accident statistics for Oakles Drive, we think together this is good evidence that the roadway is safe and that it can accommodate the vehicles that would come from Millstone. The belt and suspenders, of course, will be the site distance analysis that'll be done by DelDOT. And as I mentioned, the applicant will do whatever DelDOT wants them to do, whatever the result of that site distance analysis shows. Other traffic-related issues are regarding farm equipment and trucks on Oakles Road. That was part of the comments that you had made, too. Trucks, I noticed that a lot of testimony from the hearing had to do with the Purdue trucks in particular. Problem with Purdue trucks utilizing Oakles Road. We contacted Purdue. We said, where do you send the trucks? They said, we don't send them down Oakles Drive. We send them down O'Neill's Road, which is south of Oakles Drive. So, of course, a truck driver can drive wherever he wants to drive, but that's not where Purdue is sending them. The Purdue, when their drivers call and they want to know, how do we get to your facilities, they give them O'Neill's Drive, which is south of here. And you'll find that letter in Exhibit V in your book. Lastly, farm equipment. You know, this is a common tension between new development and agriculture in developing areas. And you're going to, you know, a comment that there could, you know, there's a lot of, there could be farm equipment on the roads and that's a problem. That's a comment that you could probably have made with just about, I don't know, 75% of the applications, and particularly in western Sussex County, that have come through. I know that when I drove down to Georgetown today on 113 South, I was behind a large piece of farm equipment. I don't know what the name of the equipment was. It's one of those big things that you take into the field. My husband's a farmer. I've seen it work. It puts nitrogen on the field, and it folds back up again, and it was heading down 113. I mean, you're going to find farm equipment. But, you know, I believe as your able counsel has mentioned early on, Sussex County has recognized and taken action legislatively to recognize agriculture's priority when it comes to land use. And they have required an agricultural use notice within the Declaration of Restrictions. And that's precisely one of the notices that we have in our Declaration of Restrictions as well. Now, implicit in that is the idea that you're going to have farm equipment on the roads. However, if you'd like for us to make it more explicit, so that not only are they on notice for dust and noise and lights and agricultural activity, but they're on notice that you expect to find farm equipment on the roads, we'd be happy to add that as part of the Declaration of Restrictions, as part of within that agricultural notice. With this new information, particularly the Purdue letter and the ag notice provisions, we believe we've addressed as best as possible the objections raised about farm equipment on Oakles and trucks on Oakles Drive. At this time, I'd like to bring back to the podium Mr. Murray to address some roadway questions. I mentioned earlier we talked about a possible entrance onto alternate Route 13. Was this ever discussed with DLDOT, and if so, what was the outcome?
It was actually discussed with DLDOT before the prior application was made, before we obtained the letter of no objection. And I'll flip back to the original site plan, or I'll just use the tax map. At that time, the property actually had frontage on 13A, and it was our client's desire to have the entrance to the subdivision on 13A. Of course, for better visibility in terms of prospective home buyers, if that application would have been to pass. We did a site meeting with Mr. John Fiore and Jamez Norwood of DLDOT at that time, and because we had alternate frontage onto Oakles Road, it was DLDOT's preference that the entrance not be located on 13A.
At DLDOT's request, has there been any land dedicated for right-of-way at the front of the property?
In order to obtain the letter of no objection, we provided a 10-foot right-of-way dedication along the county road, and that shows up on the preliminary subdivision plan in the vicinity of the proposed entrance.
Are the streets within the proposed development private?
Yes, they are.
And that's also another notice that's within the Declaration of Restrictions. Will the streets within the proposed development be built to Sussex County specifications?
Yes, they will be. 50-foot wide right-of-way is proposed. The pavement section is 20 feet wide for the travelways.
Is access to all the lots from internal streets?
Yes, it is.
Can you talk a little bit about the change in the plan regarding the bus stop location since the last P&Z submission?
It wasn't exactly something that was a major concern during the original application, but knowing that the commission typically prefers to have, of course, a covered bus shelter. We have an open space, two open space areas adjacent to where the proposed entrance is, and we've actually provided a location for a pull-off for the school bus so they'd have an opportunity to swing into that area. There'd be a covered shelter for the children, and then they could swing directly back out.
Was this a change prompted by commentary at the last P&Z hearing?
Yes, partly due to commentary and partly just knowing what the I guess the method or the request of the commission have been.
Okay. I mentioned a little earlier that DLDOT's going to require a site distance analysis. Have you done any informal site distance analysis or anything to address that before we came here tonight?
We actually already have done the site distance analysis. The photos that Stephanie had shown, the approaches, when we do the site distance analysis, we're required to do the site distance analysis from the location of the proposed entrance. So when we did that site distance analysis...
Want to use this?
That'd be great, actually. The since we're on this photo, I'll use this photo first. This was the approach
coming around the county road down towards the site in this direction, towards the southeast, and that measured site distance was approximately 1,250 feet. When the site distance was done in this fashion, coming from Route 13 towards the curve in the road nearest where the proposed entrance is, that site distance was approximately 860 feet.
And what do we think DLDOT will require? What does it generally require with these type of analyses?
For this roadway classification, 450 feet is the minimum that's required.
And we have how much in each direction?
Approximately 860 in the direction of Route 13, and in the opposite direction, approximately 1,250 feet.
Will we be doing another site distance analysis and sending that into DLDOT with the entrance plan, or how will this information work?
If the project's approved and we move forward with the construction drawings, we generate the geometric entrance design. The actual data that was collected in the field would be formally submitted to DLDOT along with the entrance application. It was mandated by DLDOT in their technical advisory committee comments.
So is this the data that you're talking about tonight, the site distance that you're talking about, is that the same data that's going to be submitted to DLDOT?
Right. What I was giving was approximate. I didn't bring the numbers with me, but the actual report, the physical measurements, will be provided to DLDOT.
Okay. And I'd like to note for the record that the proposed street names have been approved by the Sussex County Mapping and Addressing Section. Thank you, John. At this time, I'd like to draw your attention to a number of letters of support. We actually have those. They're in tab S in your book. And I'd like to ask Mr. Maheda to step forward and maybe show us where some of these folks live or the location of the land that they own. We'll kind of go through these letters. Here, hold on. The first letter we have is from Clark and Shelley Huffman. They've said, we've just purchased a new home from Maheda Construction LLC at 26849 Seaford Road on 13A. Our property backs up to the proposed new development lot 12 and lot 13. We give our blessing for the development.
That's Clark and Shelley Huffman, first time home buyers, fresh out of college. One has a teaching job now, one out of Clark County.
Okay, the next letter is from Kimberly Hopkins. She says, I live at 8946 Oakles Road in Seaford. My home is the first house on Oakles Road heading east of the proposed development entrance. I give my approval for the development and thank Maheda Construction for building affordable homes like the one I bought on Oakles Road.
Kimberly Hopkins says right here, there's that white house that you can actually see in the picture right there. That's her house. First time home buyer again.
Third letter is from Mr. Russell Neal, an adjacent homeowner. Says, I, Russell W. Neal, former part owner of the land located on Oakles Drive in Seaford, have no reservations with the planned subdivision for the property. At this time, I still own 1 acre of land adjacent to the property. I feel as though this project would be beneficial for the area.
Mr. Neal's property is right here next to the entrance, and actually Mr. Neal is here tonight.
And lastly, we have a letter from Mr. David Louie. Says he owns approximately 13 acres directly adjoining proposed Millstone housing development. We might want to actually put up the tax map for this one. I'm familiar with the plans for the proposed development. I'm completely in favor of it. I believe the proposed development will bring much needed affordable housing to the area while blending in seamlessly with the surrounding properties. In addition, a development of this kind will certainly improve surrounding property values. The plans I've seen call for development of 36 homes, which to my understanding is far less than the legal limits for a piece of property the size of the proposed Millstone development. I look forward to having Millstone development as my next door neighbor. Where's Mr. Louie's property?
Mr. Louie's property is actually adjacent to ours. He touches us on the south side, and it's GR1 for mobile home use.
All right, thank you, Mike.
Before
we get to the specific elements of 99-9C, which I know that you're all waiting for me to get to, I'd like to point out that the Declaration of Restrictions, Covenants, and Easements are found at tab R. They were sent to Sussex County for review on April the 26, 2006, under the previous application. They were revised and sent to Sussex County for review again on February the 1st, 2008. The particular disclosures within the covenants, there's four of them. There's the wetlands disclosure, the agricultural protection notice, private streets, and there is within there not a particular carved-out disclosure, but it's regarding the maintenance of the forested buffers. Proposed findings of fact and conditions have also been submitted to you, and you'll find them in tab Y of your exhibit book. The final comment made by the commission in its denial letter had stated that the commission is not satisfied that the subdivision complies with the requirements of the subdivision code, including the items in 99-9C. I'd like to go, if you'll allow me to, or you can cut me off.
You're looking at the wrong one. You're looking at Vince and saying, don't cut me off. Better look
All here. Right. I'd like to go point by point, but I won't if you don't want me to, but I certainly can.
If you can do it in 5 minutes, go ahead.
5 minutes, okay.
And there's certainly just be, you know, for the
They don't take a lot of explanation, yeah. You know. So don't feel like you have to read the whole thing to us. But I understand you want to create a record, so go ahead.
Okay. The integration of the proposed subdivision into the existing terrain and surrounding landscapes. That's part one under 99-9C. The preliminary design of Millstone incorporates the natural grade throughout the property, which would aid in directing surface runoff to planned treatment areas. Although an engineered design has yet to be prepared for Millstone, it can be assumed safely that additional materials will not have to be imported to the property to achieve a safe development design. The proposed low-density yield for Millstone is in character with other residential communities within the vicinity. Number two, minimal use of wetlands and floodplains. A wetland investigation by JCM Environmental delineated waters of the U.S. in an established drainage ditch that runs along the eastern bounds of the subject property. No lots or structure will be placed within the drainage ditch as it will be permanently preserved. The project is located entirely in an area identified on flood maps as a Zone X, which is an area described as being outside of the 0.2% annual chance floodplain. Preservation of natural and historic features. There are no known historical features on the site, but the developer is willing to allow the state to investigate the site for any historic features. Natural features such as a delineated drainage ditch, wetland habitat will not be altered as a result of the selected clearing for the placement of dwellings and septic systems. Preservation of open space and scenic views. The preliminary design of Millstone calls for an establishment we have here of 4.17 acres of open space. We actually said earlier it's 6.81. We didn't include in this calculation, I believe, the buffers. The 4.17 didn't include the actual buffer areas. When you include the buffers, it's 6.81, which will be used for passive recreation and or surface runoff treatment. The low density yield for the development will allow for greater spacing between the developing units, the dwelling units, and will preserve views of open space and natural features within the community. Minimization of tree vegetation and soil removal and grade change. The majority of the existing property consists of an open field with few areas containing herbaceous vegetation. Clearing of any vegetation will be selective for the establishment of dwelling units and septic systems, and forested buffers will be established in an effort to replace what vegetation may be cleared. Some grade change might be necessary to provide for positive drainage for the site, but if required, any alteration would be minimal. The screening of objectionable features from neighboring properties and roadways. This is part six. Forested buffers are to be established throughout the community to screen property owners within Millstone from adjacent properties. Roadway frontage is limited to the designated open space adjacent to lots 1 and 36, which are exposed to the roadway in the pre-development condition. Number seven, provision of water supply. Dwellings within Millstone be serviced by individual lot wells. Provision of sewer disposal. Dwellings within Millstone be serviced by individual lot septic systems. Number nine, prevention of pollution of surface and groundwater. If granted preliminary approval, detailed erosion sediment control plans will be submitted to the Sussex County Conservation District for review. All septic systems within the community will be designed to meet or exceed Denmark requirements. Number 10, minimization of erosion and sedimentation, minimization of changes in groundwater levels, minimization of increased rates of runoff, minimization of potential for flooding, and design of drainage so that groundwater recharge is maximized. If granted preliminary approval, detailed sediment and stormwater management plans will be prepared and submitted to DENREC for a detailed review. Per regulation established by DENREC, post-development runoff shall not exceed those rates experienced in pre-development condition. We've talked about the impervious surface earlier. You know, we're talking about somewhere conservatively 20% over an area which is classified as good by the DGS. Provision for safe vehicular and pedestrian movement within the site and adjacent roadways. If preliminary approval is granted, detailed entrance and roadway plans will be submitted to DLDOT and the Sussex County Engineering Department for review and approval. All roadways shall be designed to meet or exceed those standards established by the Sussex County Engineering Department. Also, a covered shelter will be established near the development entrance for children who will be waiting to be transported to school. Effect on area property values. the establishment of 36 new residential lots. And you've seen how they look. I mean, these are nice homes that are in character with this other surrounding homes. They're not in character with the mobile homes. They're not in character with the singles and the double wides, but they are in character with the single family homes that are nearby. It will not have an adverse effect on adjacent property values. It's anticipated that the property values will increase due to the standards set forth in the restrictions. Millstone will be in character with several other residential communities located within the vicinity of the proposed community, and we counted 11 of them, I did, in my mile and a half survey. The preservation and conservation of farmland. Forested buffers shall be established throughout the community to act as a screen between Millstone and adjacent properties that are currently being utilized for agricultural practices. Also, the required preservation notice has been provided in the preliminary plan, and if approved, will be shown on the final plan and has been placed in the deed restrictions for Millstone. Effect on schools, public buildings, and community facilities. This is item number 14. The project is within the Seaford School District. The establishment of Millstone would create an additional tax base that could be used to improve upon facilities within the school district. The proposed development is situated between the town of Laurel, the town of Blaze, and the city of Seaford, and such is anticipated that residents within the community would patronize public buildings and community facilities within these municipalities. It's not expected that an establishment of 36 new dwelling units would have an adverse impact on said facilities. Effect on area roadways and public transportation. A copy of the preliminary subdivision plan has been reviewed by DLDOT, and a letter of no objection has been issued for the proposed location of the development entrance. If preliminary approval is granted, a detailed entrance plan will be prepared for the DLDOT's review and comment. MLK Partners understands that they'll be responsible for whatever improvements DLDOT would see fit to be made in the area roadways. As no public transportation is available, it's not anticipated that a strain on those resources would be experienced. Compatibility with other land uses. We keep going and around this tree, but we'll go one more time. Millstone would be situated in a low, is situated in a low density area, and as such is planned to have a community low density as well of 0.83 dwelling units per acre. It's also located within, we have in here 2 miles of a number of other communities, residential communities as well. Florence Johnson Subdivision, Sussex Manor, Hill and Dale, Nanticoke Estates, Hollyview, Hastings Estates, Town of Blaze, and City of Seaford. I think we actually had to go out to that 2 miles to get the City of Seaford into this one, didn't we? Must have been. Effect on area roadways. The establishment of Millstone would not have had an adverse effect on area waterways. If approved, detailed stormwater and erosion control plans will be submitted to DenRite for their review and design of the final stormwater treatment systems within the proposed community be required to meet or exceed those DenRec requirements. Lastly, I notice that we do have, I have requested before you a variance, and to the extent that these elements are important in your decision, I wanted to briefly touch on these. The variance we're requesting is the, currently you can only have a 1,000-foot long cul-de-sac. We have a cul-de-sac requesting about 1,100 feet or so. And the reason that we're requesting is because clearly the unique physical characteristics of the property. It's very long and very thin, and you know, without an without the variance, we couldn't access a significant piece of the property that would be towards Route 13. Certainly, this represents an unnecessary hardship because part of that land would be unusable, but also it would not alter the essential character of the neighborhood, because one of the things we're talking about is that particularly the area that we're requesting the variance for, which is this area here, the adjacent surrounding community, are these little single-family homes right here. It will not impair the appropriate use of adjacent property, clearly. And we have, of course, with the ag notice provision in the declaration of restrictions. At this point, this concludes our presentation. We'd be happy to answer any questions, and we respectfully request your thoughtful review and approval of this application.
All righty, we thank you. We'll see if anyone has any questions for you, and we'll start with Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Hansen, and when I reviewed the minutes from the previous hearing concerning this project when it was presented to us earlier, there was mention of walking trails were going to be provided throughout the project, and not only did I not see those, but Mr. Murray can probably vouch for us, frequently with the commission, we in projects of this size we like to have sidewalks as well, and that brings me to point number 11 in your statement of satisfaction where you talk about this provision for safe vehicular and pedestrian movement within the site. I frankly don't see that when I see a road that stretches 1,100 feet, I believe, is what you approximated from the rear of the property to the front. So my concern is whether or not that part of the 99-9C is really being addressed here in terms of the safe pedestrian travel, either through no walkways or sidewalks.
If walkways or sidewalks is something that the commission would require, I think that the applicant would not have a problem installing particularly sidewalks in the development.
Okay. Thank you. And Mr. Murray, I guess this question would be for you as the engineer. We talk about the amount of open space that's being provided. If we subtract out the stormwater management pond that you would have to provide, and we subtract out the 30-foot forested buffer that you would be required to provide, how much actual open space is being offered in this project?
With the exception of the buffer areas and the area for either passive recreation or stormwater management, there's no additional open spaces provided, with the exception of
two open space areas that are adjacent to the proposed entrance in this location.
Okay. I looked, I just couldn't find any. Thank you. I have no further questions this time, Mr. Chairman.
And Mr. Burton?
So I just have one question. I guess I'm a little confused on the siting and the entrance. Is the entrance approved pending the siting numbers?
We obtained a letter of no objection, which is for the entrance location only. DLDOT had mentioned in their initial technical advisory committee comments that were back when this application was originally made back in, I believe, 2005, that if we move forward, if we submit an entrance plan for review, that we have to give a site distance analysis along with that. They didn't have any technical advisory committee comments this time through. They just simply provided a copy of their letter of no objection. So the site distance analysis is something that we would be required to provide. If preliminary approval is granted and we submit the geometric entrance design, we would also have to submit the site distance analysis along with that for DLDOT's review.
So they have not objected to the entrance in its current location?
Correct.
So regardless of what the site analysis come through, the entrance is approved?
Correct. The location of the entrance, they have no objection to the location of the entrance.
Thank you.
That's all. All right, sir. Mr. Smith?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just going over and thank you, Mr. Johnson, for pointing that out about the open space. The stormwater management area, is that that is sited there, the wet pond, because why?
Because it is closest in proximity to our ultimate outfall would be, which would be that drainage ditch
that's located along the eastern corner of the property, running up towards the county road and down along the property.
And it's just a drainage ditch. It was not a tax ditch, I believe.
Correct.
I remembered you saying, but there and no wetlands located with any of the lot lines.
Correct.
There seems to be a twofold designation. There is investment level 3 and there is investment level 4.
Yes, that's
on
correct.
On the property. Any thoughts to any connectivity of the streets? Any future connectors in your layout?
We didn't provide any interconnectivity just because of the nature of the existing parcels, with the exception of
The lands that are identified as WYWJ. Almost everything else around us is either an existing residential single-family home property or it's farmed.
And with the nature of
there being this drainage ditch, which was classified as wetlands along the property line from the county road down to this point, that really leaves us no option of providing interconnectivity through this location without having at least to go through the Army Corps of Engineers for a permit. So for the sake of not encroaching upon those wetlands, we didn't provide any interconnection there. We don't know yet if DLDOT would require
any necessity for interconnection. Again, we only have a letter of no objection, but.
So with that statement, then, are you indicating a contradiction then, that the area is not compatible with the other uses, and that it's, did you just not say that?
Oh, absolutely.
That you didn't put connectivity because the other parcels are large parcels and single family homes?
No, the only large parcel that is currently not being farmed is the property that was identified as WYWJ Ventures, which is the property that was described before as being zoned GR. The others are farms that are immediately adjacent to us, but again, within half a mile and a mile of our location, there are several other residential subdivisions in the area. So it is, I would say, you know, it is most certainly in character with the immediate area.
Plus, we have that other parcel that's recently sold. That's what, two parcels away. That this parcel 230 that was recently sold to, is it Mr. Ward? Mr. Ward.
So is it being characterized as a developing area that might warrant having a connectivity of streets? Or is it being
parcels of land to get you? Excuse me, sir. If you're going to speak, you have to come up front and speak into the microphone so we can record you.
That's not a comment that we've yet received from DelDOT. I would expect that when should we go through, will we be going through additional review by them? Maybe they'll suggest interconnectivity, but I don't know.
I would add that there are a few other subdivisions that we've currently worked on. We've obtained letters of no objection from DelDOT for. And in those projects, when they have felt that an interconnection to an adjacent property was warranted, we were asked to provide it. And that is something that we did have to provide on the preliminary subdivision plan prior to coming before the commission. In this case, it was not requested to get our letter of no objection.
And so that would be coming from DelDOT. They didn't feel it was necessary.
The traffic corridor, the multimodal that was in one of the tabs that I think you said was in the investment level three. Any idea when those plans will come to fruition?
No, I don't. I really don't. I just simply took this from DelDOT's, you know, corridor capacity program guide for when they're anticipating, you know, doing that. They are anticipating doing improvements in the future, as opposed to preservation areas where they're not anticipating doing any improvements in the future. So that was just the distinction that I saw.
Okay. You showed some slides of the road. Is that road lower than some of the existing grades on the neighboring properties? Just a question.
That I don't know. We're going to ask Mr. Murray about that one.
You're saying is the roadway lower
grade
than the adjacent?
Lower than some of the others. I'm asking because I got a feeling we're going to hear some testimony about rainwaters and things, and perhaps an icing problem, and quite likely there could be some vehicle accidents that the traffic analyzer and DelDOT never gets reported, where cars fishtail. And
I can say I've been out there several times since we originally started working on this project with the applicant. The most of the roadway that I've seen is either flush, I would say, with the adjacent properties. Of course, they have roadside swales for the drainage that runs off the road. But the properties in general, there's certainly the farm that is
directly across the street from where the proposed entrance is higher than the road. The roadway is super elevated along this curve in the county road, adjacent to where the proposed entrance is. The rest of the roadway is a standard,
center line and running slopes away from that. But that particular location in the curve, it is super elevated. So any water that would be sheet flowing off the roadway
would be running to the north into the drainage ditch on the north side of the road.
So you don't see that as a concern then?
In terms of the grade of the road?
Mm-hmm.
No.
I see. Okay. All right, sir. That's an answer.
I did want to respond, if I could, a little bit, maybe a little bit more fuller to the question about the DLDOT corridor plan. And just looking through, it mentions on the exhibit from DLDOT that this, where this millstone is located, is in areas of existing development or planned growth, and the capacity is preserved through sustainable investment in the roads. And sustainable investment, I would expect to mean that they're constantly going to be, when the roads need it, they're going to be repaved. Public transit, pedestrian, bicycle provisions, and access management. So, and if you also take a look at the exhibit, it shows where there are projects that are currently in DLDOT's CIP. They're not in this area. So that's not something, I mean, I think that probably the best way to explain is that they're planning on actually maintaining the roads and keeping them up so that they can preserve the capacity.
You stated the given, and I thank you for the PowerPoint presentation. I think it was helpful with the slides and the, I'm sure all the commissioners have been there, but and there again, it brings out the other homes, that these will be affordable homes similar to what would have been under the county's MPHU, which you outlined for us. Was there a thought by the developer to put any of these homes into the MPHU program?
I talked to Mr. LaCates, and because technically they can't approve any projects that even have a portion of the project in a level four, then it's not a program that we could have gotten into. So, I mean, we're in spirit complying with what the ordinance is asking for. But technically, because there is a portion of the site in level four, we wouldn't qualify.
That's all.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you, Mr. Lang.
If this project were to be approved, because it should have come up quite a bit, when would the buffer, forested buffers be built in those forest buffer areas that are required?
It's been a practice lately, something we've been recommending to clients is if the buffer would be actually established as the preliminary clearing and grubbing would be for the property. In order to establish the road, there would have to be clearing of the topsoil, of course, to get to your subgrade. That would provide an opportunity at least to use that topsoil. Instead of having to move that material off-site, you could actually use it. Create a small berm in that landscaping area, and then put your plantings on top of that berm. So it's something that would be actively established as construction would be taking place.
And the developer will agree to that as their standard practice as well.
We have a problem with some to go ahead and finish your whole project before they start putting in the buffer and end up with little minor tree sizes rather than something that's growing. Thank you. That's all I have.
All right, sir. Thank you. Mr. Katz.
One question, I noticed you didn't make any reference to tab T. Is the farm access road that's there now, is that going to be relocated?
No, it's not going to be relocated. That was a license that had been granted to one of the Ockels that, you know, and they knew ahead of time when this land is sold that the license expires and has expired.
That's all. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Abbott, any questions?
Questions.
Council?
No questions, thanks.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
Just a point of clarification.
Okay.
Will the houses that are being proposed for the subdivision, will they all be stick-built?
Yes, they will.
So you don't...
Let me clarify that.
Okay.
If they're built by Maheta Construction, they'll be stick-built.
We could deed restrict them.
Yes, deed restricted for stick-built, which will be us or someone else, but...
Or modular homes.
Or modular homes. But no.
Or modular homes.
Or modular homes.
Modular homes are stick built. That's fine.
That's why I was seeking clarification on that.
Yes.
And are you proposing a minimum square foot for living space?
Yes, 1,300.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
That is. Okay, we thank you. If you would, take a seat nearby. We'll see if anyone has an interest in your application. Is there anyone here that would like to speak in favor of subdivision 2006-61 MLK Partners? Yes, sir. Step right up. Give us your name. You can have the floor.
My name is Russ Neal, and I have a one-acre lot that butts up to MLK's proposed subdivision here, and I want to speak in favor of it. I do not have a problem with them putting in the type of home that they're putting in. I have seen their subdivision or their plans, and I think this is a good thing for this area here. One of the things that she brought up that I've been thinking about over the past few years is that we are running out of affordable home for people that are starting out in the county, and I think this is one subdivision that we got that we see coming forward that does provide for young people to get a foothold and start on their living. And as a former electrical contractor, which I am no longer am, and at no time ever did any work for MLK, I have seen a lot of construction, and I have seen some of their construction, and it's excellent work they do. And during construction, they keep their lots clean, they keep their trash picked up. Everything they do, they're a first-class operation that I've seen come out of these gentlemen. So with someone who has an interest with a piece of property next to them, I would like to see you approve this to move forward.
All right, sir, we thank you. Anyone else like to speak in favor? Okay. Is there anyone here that would like to speak in opposition to subdivision 2006-61? Yes, ma'am.
Good evening, gentlemen. Sue Oakles. I live at 8872 Oakles Drive, which is with my husband, Burton Oakles. We own the farm, which is on the north side of the proposed development. This is a tough act to follow. I've been here all night listening, and actually, when I first got the information in the mail about the hearing, you know, it kind of hits you, and you're thinking, oh, what are you going to do? I researched, and I thought about it, and then yesterday, I think it was Mr. Murray was out there measuring the road. Was that you? A co-worker. And he said something, and it kind of hit me, and I said to him, I said, oh, you're taking your life in your hands walking on this road. And he said, oh, I've been on curvier roads than this. There's a lot worse in Sussex County. And I said to him, yeah, but you don't live on this road. And then it really hit me. That's what it's all about. These people all over here do not live on Road 488. There is nothing the matter with MLK. These guys are great builders. I've seen their houses. One of my neighbors lives in their houses. It has nothing to do with that. What it has to do with is the fact that we, many of us back here, live on that road. And yes, I've contacted Del Dot myself, and I found out quite a few things. And first of all, I think I told you back in 05 that Del Dot did not have any type of accident reports, maybe 3, 5, something like that. Well, when you live there and you've been there as long as we have, you see the accidents. In fact, just the other day, there was a young man or an older gentleman who ran off the road and ended up in Mrs. Janet Neal's yard. And the only reason he got help was because he hit his panic button and somebody heard him and ran over to him. You know, there's all kinds of stories like that. But the thing of it is you don't see that when you see those little blips of a film about when there's nobody on that road. Seeing the lawyer in her car is not giving you a real idea. There have been times when I can't get across the road to get my mail until I wait for 5, 6, 10 cars sometimes because they're coming one right after the other. In fact, when I contacted Del Dot, I found out that since we were here back in 05, they have hot mixed Oakles Drive. And since that time, there are now 642 cars per day that travel Oakles Drive. You didn't see any of those cars on that film because they took them when they weren't there. But there are 642 cars. That's 200 more cars per day since we were here back in 05. That is a documented Del Dot figure. We talk about that curve that everybody's worried about. Well, you know, when you live there, you see it all happen. I've heard there's been a head-on collision there. Last summer, there was a tractor trailer who ran off right at their entrance into the ditch. You don't see these things or hear these things because they've not called the police. They want somebody to help them get out of that ditch and get on their way. I can't tell you how many mailboxes I have. Mrs. Neal has had many mailboxes. In fact, Russell's grandmother was never allowed to walk across the road when she got older to get her mail because they were afraid she couldn't hear the cars coming. So, you know, in all reality, we're being a little underestimated, I guess the word would be. Any time that traffic is ever interrupted, whether it's an accident at the Route 13 intersection or the alternate 13 intersection, Oakles Drive is backed up. There have been times, folks, when there have been cars that are at the stop sign at the Route 13 intersection, and they are lined up past my house, which I live about halfway, all the way around to the alternate 13 intersection. Now, you tell me that's a road that you'd want a development on? And also, DelDOT gave me another little bit of information. They say that they average, when they have a development or a subdivision, they add about 10 cars per house. That's what they figure. And that might be a little more than you want to think, but that's their average. And you figure 36 houses times 10 cars. Pull those out on that road. Yes, Oakles Drive is frequently used by farm equipment. We all own it, and it's all up and down there. There is also large truck traffic, and I understand that, you know, they contacted Purdue because I did mention Purdue Agri-Recycle the last time. Well, Purdue Agri-Recycle, they have their own trucks, but many of the trucks that are up and down that road are independent haulers. In fact, I have two letters, if I'm allowed to two independent truck drivers who have concerns about traveling up and down that road because of the traffic, but they do because that's a cut through. It's a shortcut. There's a lot of dump trucks. Allen's is through there. Purdue's through there. So when you call Purdue, you're going to call Purdue truck traffic, and they're going to tell you, I'm a dispatcher, so I know. I'm going to tell these guys to go this way. That doesn't mean they go that way. Another thing that concerns us is that I've seen the pictures, and yes, there is a school bus stop, and they can come inside and pick up the children. But, sir, if you've been on that road and you happen to be there when that tractor trailer went into the ditch last summer, what if children had been out there riding their bikes? 36 houses, there's going to be some kids. And do you think they're going to stay in that development? I don't think so. They're going to come out on that road. And it is a dangerous situation. It's easy to sugarcoat it because you can do all of the numbers from all of the different organizations. But when you're there, I'm not sugarcoating it. I'm telling you the truth. One of the things that I feel like what happened is that when you saw all of the different houses that were shown throughout our area, it kind of undermines the whole project because those houses are within 2 to 3 miles from us all. I mean, they're in the area, but they're not on Oakles Drive. And all of those sites that they showed, those houses are probably nowhere near the same type of proposed subdivision area that we're talking about. They don't have a subdivision being plopped down right in the middle of a farming community. So I really don't think that was a really good reference for you to see. I mean, those people are great neighbors, but I don't consider them my neighbors. Do you know what I'm saying? They're in a neighborhood of their own, but they live away from us. The only entrance to this development is going to be on Oakles Drive. So that means these 36 homes, these people are, that's going to be our neighborhood. It's not going to be the people who live in Johnson's development.